Good morning, Mr. Brown.
Hey, good morning, Christopher. How are you doing?
I'm fine here. We got some rain finally, a little bit.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah. We got some here, too. It's raining today up here, too, so it's north
and
south,
I was starting to wonder.
Yeah.
It was getting really dry here. I mean, it's not been a whole lot, but it's a start. I mean, the place was starting to look like a desert.
Yeah. Whose ball game were you at yesterday?
My oldest son.
Oh, that's what it was.
Yeah, they the names of their teams are the same as the names in the NFL.
Uh-huh.
In their league.
Uh-huh. Yeah, how's your week going?
Pretty good. You've seen the gist of it here. We're gonna have Alper here. I don't think Paul is gonna be here. And Sonny had to cancel at the last minute due to some family obligations. So it's probably gonna be just me, you, and Alper.
Okay.
Let me take a look here. What the big items are. So what's your opinion of the back and forth? I won't get too deep into this because I want to save Alper for the conversation, but name completely flips my mind.
Tom?
Holy cow. Yeah, Tom. Mm-hmm. The interaction there, back and forth.
Well, like I said, I think it's a good deal. I think we got some of the things that were my concerns ironed out, and I think we should go ahead with it. Like I said, you need to borrow a pen. Paul was a little concerned about the money, and I told him I wouldn't be concerned about the money. As, that'll always
we'll find the money. Alper's here now, so we'll.
Uh-huh.
Good morning, Alper.
Good morning.
Good morning,
How
Alper.
Are you guys? Good morning.
We're good.
Good.
So you guys talking about the deal?
Huh?
What was that?
Were you guys talking about the deal?
Yeah. I didn't get too far. Let's cover the things that are not too there's not a whole lot to talk about, and then probably focus on that. And let me just do a general update of the four things. Our three-legged stool, and then we'll get to the deal. That's probably worth some discussion. And what else? Probably a little bit on the business plan.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about that.
So, okay. So the top of the stool is the patents. There's been two things since the last phone call, but they're minor things. One is on your address as recorded at WIPO, Alper, it was your apartment in Chicago. So the European Patent Office sends out a notice that just basically says, by the way, we've received a patent filing here and you're listed as an inventor. It bounced back to them because it had the apartment address on it. So I sent the correction to our attorney, and then they'll file that correction, and that's the end of that. So
okay.
That's just a clerical thing. The next is the Russian application, and you guys saw this in the interactions with Nick, but we'll be paying the fees probably within 10 days or so to go ahead and proceed to the next step in the examination, which is the substantive examination in Russia, and that should take about a year to complete. So. Meaning that we should have an allowance inside of a year unless something goes wrong there. So that's pretty fast, actually.
It is.
I think. I believe the way things look right now, the first one is going to be the European Patent Office, and we should see that the first part of next year because of the acceleration. I think the UK separately, which, of course, if that happens, one cancels the other one out. You can't have them both at the same time. So, but I think those two will be the first group, and then, surprisingly, Russia could be the next one. And the U.S. is coming up on maturity according to their backlog, the backlog being 3 years, almost exactly 3 years. And they don't start counting at the provisional date. They start counting at the utility filing date. So that would be near the end of next year. So that's probably the next one.
Chris?
India, it's hard to say. Yeah.
Do you think with the push to speed up the patents that could possibly get an extra push?
I think I think that taking if we get an allowance from somebody, I would suggest that we file that with the U.S. Patent Office. It doesn't have any legal force of effect, but it can have sway over the examiner.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, there's no reason not to do it, to let him know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Morning.
Yeah, I would do that. In fact, I would do that every direction that it happens. In other words, if we get an allowance in the European Union, I would take that allowance in the European Union, and I would have a copy of that filed with every other open application. Basically say, look, we have an approval here. I would send it to all the ones that haven't approved yet.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Well, I guess Obama wanted the patent office to kind of kick it into high gear because these patents were taking so long to process. And
I haven't been able to find out a couple things. Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't been able to find out whether or not that there's a grandfather clause in that. Not the acceleration. The acceleration part has to do with staffing levels, just working through the backlog.
Yeah.
But the more critical part of that is the changing from first to invent to first to file. The legal standard, and I don't have a concern about first to invent. That's why there's so much work done on doing searches and why you're required to report anything that's prior art. That's how come there's so much of a focus on that in the U.S. system. But, you know, it would be nice if it's grandfathered because it just keeps somebody from trumping up some kind of baloney claim when this thing has value, because that's typically what happens. You know, you get a patent that's really got a lot of commercial value, and somebody either legitimately or illegitimately, unfortunately, in a lot of cases, tries to say, no, you know, you might have filed this, but, you know, I invented it first, and here's my sketches from 1945, you know.
Then mine from 1938 should come up. Of course, the fact I was born in 49 is doesn't matter. Okay.
You know, that's why I got so bent out of shape. That's why I get so bent out of shape when these clowns that keep trying to claim authorship of this concept, like our friend over there in Boston, tries to claim, you know, when he was just out of diapers, he was thinking about a sports stock market. You got to be careful with letting people get away with that kind of stuff in the public domain, because what that does is there's a potential anchor there for saying, you know, no, I had that moment of a flash of inspiration, you know, right after I had got out of diapers, and you know, therefore I'm the guy that came up with it first. That's why I don't tolerate any of that, because you know, I don't want any. I want to remove every possible chance of somebody making a claim like that. That's why I've been really diligent about splattering as much information as I can out in the public domain, and including archives and things, because nobody's going to ever challenge it if it doesn't have value. But, you know, I believe I believe we're on the right track here, and we are going to produce something of extraordinary value, and that's just going to bring people out of the woodwork, that whole patent trolling garbage that goes on, you know?
Uh-huh.
So let's hope. I don't know. I haven't seen any analysis yet. Let's hope that the grandfather, that the pending patents, when this is finally signed into law, that they are grandfathered into the first to file. It'll just be further insurance that somebody doesn't try to screw us up once we get out of the gate, or try to take a piece of it, which is what they'll do. But, you know, we'll see. It'll be what it'll be. We've done the best job we can do. I'd be extraordinarily surprised if there's somebody out there that's it's not there. I mean, it's not there. That doesn't mean somebody's not going to lie and say they did it first, but they didn't. So that's really it. There's nothing else to report there. Alper, do you have any comments on this part of things?
I don't have a comment. I have a question. You had a brief exchange with Nick about the European patents kind of impacting the Russia or vice versa. Can you just clarify that? I didn't exactly follow that.
I see Paul's here. Guys, I wasn't paying attention to the...
Hi, Paul.
Hey, guys.
No, the conversation with Nick was about Russia. He confused... he thought that the Russian situation was an acceleration. He didn't realize that we split the... Yeah. We split the filing into pieces because... the agent was totally convinced, almost totally convinced, that we weren't going to have a chance because the way the laws are written in Russia. So he said, don't waste the money, because if you pay all the fees up front, including the substantive examination, and you don't make it past a formal examination, then you've wasted your money. So let's wait and get an answer first on the formal examination before we proceed. And what I was saying about the WIPO stuff is the WIPO clear search report and legal opinion have had an impact on two things right now so far, which is they've enabled the acceleration in Europe and they have affected the Russian filing also, because they get copies of that. And this happened, I think, last summer, actually. The World Intellectual Property Organization sends certified copies of this report. They do it electronically. It's not in the mail. They transmit to all the offices that we listed as our potential nations, which we listed every member nation, as we didn't know which ones we were going to pick. So they all get a copy of that report as part of the file. So when you make your national entry, that's in there. That document, those documents are in there, the legal opinion and the search report. So it does have some weight. That's the other part. I think you might have been mixing a couple of conversations I had there together. So what Nick was saying is the downside of an acceleration is it could end up in a denial rather than leaving your patent pending for a longer period of time, which is true. I mean, that I didn't consider that in the case of Europe or any of the other places. But, I mean... The reality is, guys, is there's no real, I mean, the real legal force and effect of a patent is when it reaches approval. So you have to ask the question, do you benefit from this, you know, unknown middle ground status of patent pending over a longer period of time, or is there greater benefit to an approval in a shorter period of time, but could also be a denial, you know what I'm saying? See the pros and cons there. I didn't, in the case of Europe, I didn't even consider that because the attorney was, I mean, if you look at the way his language read, I mean, there was no question in his mind that we should accelerate. So it didn't cross my mind that, well, while this looks really good and we're able to accelerate by basically filing a one-page form, you know, and the reason that we can do that is because we've had favorable outcomes on these two documents, then we should not do that because it could mean a denial. It just, my mind doesn't work like that. That's looking at the downside of things. I don't look at the downside unless it crosses a threshold, which is at about 50.1%. I mean, it's just not the way my mind is wired. If the probability of a positive outcome is high, I don't even look at the downside. I mean, it's just, that's, I'm not wired like that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. And I agree. I mean, yes, probability of getting denied in Europe, but I mean, the opinion is pretty clean. You know, this is extremely novel. I don't think that's going to happen. We should go for it. If it happens, it happens. You know, not do anything about it, but we shouldn't really worry about the possibility at this point.
No. And further, if you look at the document that the agent, the European agent filed, you know, he even, at the end of it, he even said, you know, just in the unlikely event that you're going to deny this without discussion, I'm requesting oral argument now. So you're not going to see a denial letter. What you're going to see is if there's a challenge of some sort, there's going to be an office action, and that office action could require a hearing. But he's already kind of preempted that by saying, you know, if you're not going to approve this, we want to accelerate this because these other things are positive and that allows us to do that, and we believe we're clear, and therefore, you know, give us our patent. However, if you decide to not give us our patent and intend on doing that without even contacting us, I'm telling you right now that I'm requesting oral argument if that situation occurs. So I think we're in good shape there. Again, guys, I might get blindsided by this, but I don't think so. I don't spend a whole lot of time. In fact, I don't spend any time chewing my nails over whether or not we reach patent maturity. Russia was the big question mark. China's the second biggest question mark. But we did some work there. Remember, Alper, we created that amended language we added to the patent to address that this is an economic solution. This is a solution to an economic problem. It's not just a business process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's it's good stuff. And I think, remember that was in the Russian filing. So that, you know, another reason why this could have come back the way it did is that was in there. You know, we did a good job. But, guys, I wouldn't, you know, we're going to just work. I just think it's a matter of, I don't think we're going to get automatic approvals. I think it could happen with the EU. It could happen. Because I don't know, I just have a feeling. I have a feeling that one of these is going to pop, you know. And if we get the EU allowance, that's a lot of horsepower there in our portfolio. I mean, now you've got an approval in 39 countries, you know, instantly. And that can do all kinds of stuff in terms of beefing up our financing ability to access financing, and then we can use it as leverage to not leverage because like I said, they don't have to do anything with it, but you take your approvals and you roll them into the other offices, sort of like what we'll do with our regulatory support letters. You know, if we get an EU approval, we take that EU approval and we transmit it to all the other open agencies. Just to show that, you know, just do it as a disclosure filing. You know, EU gives us an approval. We file in the U.S., Canada, India, Russia, and China. Look, we've reached allowance in the EU, and that can impact the examiner and the rest of them. We keep doing that. When you get the second one, you transmit the second one to the rest of the open agencies. And you know, kind of stack them on top of each other. I don't see any reason not to do that. I mean, at the end of the day, it is. Once they get past the legal analysis, which, you know, guys, I don't see an issue with the legal analysis. We did as good a job as can be done there. I think that you know, it's discretionary. You have a person there whose job is to look at that, and if they see that it's a, for lack of a better term, it's a cover your ass kind of business, you know. Ultimately, a patent examiner is generally not a super high level attorney. A lot of these guys are just out of school. And, you know, what they're really looking for is, has the work been done? And if somebody challenges this and they go back to the file, do I have something to lean on? That's, you know, that's how it works. They don't have a vested interest in whether or not you get a patent or not, or what that means to you commercially. It's more of a, has all, you know, it's a bureaucracy. It's a bureaucratic process. You know, have all the forms been properly filled out? Has the search been done? Do I know of anything? Can I find anything that conflicts? You know, is all the paperwork in order? Oh, well, looky here, you know, the UN says it's okay, and the UN says there's no prior art, and oh, they got an approval in Europe. You know, I mean, that stuff all has weight, you know? So, anyhow, anything else on that, Alper? I'm going to go around the room, and then we'll move to the next.
No, I guess my only comment is, what you're saying is makes sense. I would just check, you know, with the attorney before we do that. I don't see why that would not be allowed, but, you know, just in case.
Well, I wouldn't transmit it directly because I'm not the agent, so it would have to go through the attorney in each jurisdiction.
Right, of course.
So, yeah, so that would automatically happen. They would, you know, they would automatically tell me, this is a good idea, this is a bad idea, this is against the rules. So, yeah, of course.
Right.
Paul, do you have any thoughts on the patent side of things?
No, I think we're headed in a good direction, and I think this whole argument of acceleration versus not acceleration, I don't think we'd be having this unless we didn't get that, you know, favorable report from the WIPO patent office, which basically said, you look good. Everything looks pretty good across all three areas. And I think that's what's guiding our decisions is what guided our decision with Europe and anywhere else where we have an opportunity to accelerate. So, I mean, I'm good, and I'm crossing my fingers that obviously Europe comes back. I think that's the first one that'll come back based on the timelines, that it comes back and we get patent approval, because I think that'll be huge for the whole profile of the business.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, it's that economic area is greater than the United States in size. In fact, it's let me look here. If we, because I just sent you that spreadsheet. Yeah, guys, you know, I work a lot on, you know this, on gut reaction. And when I saw that note from the attorney in Europe, in the UK, it was an instant reaction. I was stunned, speechless, that it was just he had already prepared the letter. And, you know, I was just, what, check box number one and check box number two, and we shave years off of the time? I mean, I had to go out and ride my bicycle around and come back and read it again and then go stare at the ceiling for a few minutes and read it. And I'm like, this is not how this works. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, what's the scoop? There's got to be some kind of catch here. And, no, there's... The catch is, you know, do you want to do it or not? Well, I mean, it was a no-brainer. I didn't even there was not even that momentary pause. It was like, does it cost anything? No, it doesn't cost anything. Well, yeah. You know, I mean, that, like you said, it'll change our ability. I mean, the business profile will just, it will go up several orders of magnitude, you know? I mean, actually, it's more than that. It will legitimize the business in one move. I mean, it'll just
yeah,
be
insane. Yeah, and I mean, it's great. Like, I mean, the fact that us filing, you know, with the UN allowed us to be kind of had, they took a look at the whole application, you know, right up front, and they liked what they see, they liked what they saw, but we wouldn't have got that kind of favorable response, right, if we wouldn't have even filed for national entries in the PCT, right?
No, we wouldn't have. That's right. And in fact, when that happened, you know, I didn't understand how that process, let me just, the numbers on the 39 countries is there's 600 million people in those 39 countries. And the GDP is $18 trillion. So it's a larger economic area than the U.S. Twice the population and about 30% larger in GDP. So, yeah, that's big news. No, it wouldn't have happened. And I remember when they were explaining to me how that worked, because, I mean, I didn't have any idea. I just said, when we started the patent process in the beginning, I said, well, okay, you file in the U.S., but what happens outside the U.S.? I know there's some, like, implied legal value, but it's not explicit in terms of a U.S. patent abroad. Well, you know, there's another process. You file with the specialized agency in the U.N., and they explain it all to me, and I said, okay, well, then what happens then? Well, you have to decide which nations you're going to do a national entry. I said, what is a national entry? The national entry is the actual national level filing. Oh, well, when does that happen? Oh, that's 20 months away from the... And I'm thinking, well, I don't need to think about that right now. And they're like, you're going to have to hire attorneys in each one of these countries. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, that's 2 years away. What do I have to do right now? Well, you have to decide which ones. Well, I don't know which ones. You know, I don't know which ones we're going to be able to afford. I don't know how expensive this is going to be. What do we do? Well, you can list them all. I said, well, is there any additional fees for that? No, you can name all the members. I said, well, then name all the members. Then what happens? Well, then you have to pick a search office to do the search, because what they do is they do an international search. And I said, well, how do you decide which office to use? And they said, well, strangely, I mean, it may seem kind of strange, but the South Korean agency is the most comprehensive. And I think the reason that is because just the technology hub that South Korea is, and in the Asian region, it's like, it's the one that is most likely to draw up a conflict, including in the Asian languages, you know, Japanese, Chinese, Korean languages. And they said, that's the one we recommend. I mean, that's if you want to do the most comprehensive search that we're aware of, then you file that search through the Korean Intellectual Property Office. And I'm like, okay, you know, it's all new to me, but if that's what it is, that's what it is. And that's what they did. So the next step is that the lawyers that work for the UN, they look at the claims. They look at the patent and they look at the claims. And, you know, this is a treaty. The members of this PCT are members of a treaty. So what do? They look. The whole purpose of a treaty is uniformity of the legal conventions. So you look at the filing, you look at the patent, and you look at the convention, and you look and decide whether or not it matches, and whether or not it fits, and then you issue a legal report. And remember, these law always works off of reaction. So what are people really looking at when they issue that report? If somebody ever challenges us on our patentability someday, guess what happens? It tracks back to the person who said it was okay. Well, you have a national level authority who says it's okay. But guys, the UN is that's the world government, like it or not. So when you go, well, who said it was okay before you said it was okay? Well, the UN World Intellectual Property Organization, which governs, I think it's 162 countries that are party to the PCT treaty, or however many it is, you got it in their latest. You know, they issued the legal opinion, and we based our our allowance primarily off of that. You see how that works? So there's a lot of power there in that document. And just looking at the way the guy in the UK, the agent in the UK, how how he responded. I mean, he didn't even ask me whether or not I wanted to accelerate. You know, he just wrote the letter and said, you know, authorize me to send it. And I looked around and I looked at cases like what happens here, and most of the time, guys, it goes straight to allowance. In this condition, where you have no conflicts and challenges in your search, nothing even close. I mean, we don't even have something that has to be talked about. We don't even have like a close call. I mean, it's a flat out, there's nothing there. And there's no ifs, ands, buts, or maybes about it. So, you know, it'll be what it'll be, guys, you know, but I just, my gut instinct says, yeah, don't focus on this, you know. Just maintenance the process and make sure that you stay on top of the paperwork. You know, I do a round robin through, now that I got all of the filings are available to be looked at, except for, well, I can't see India and China, but I can see all the rest of them. I can see the U.S.'s status. I now know who the patent examiner is. You can go to the U.S. Patent Office website, and you can search pending patents, and you can see the exact status. And now we have an actual guy's name who's assigned to our patent. The EU has their, EPO has their online system. Canada, I checked that one. It's in the queue there. So I check the ones I can check, and I just stay straight on top of it and look to see if anything has changed. I noticed that the European Patent Office, that Alper's address had bounced, but I didn't say anything to the lawyer because I'm like, you know, this is his job. He should, it's kind of a test, you know. I didn't bring it to his attention, but I saw it. You know, I saw that they said this inventor's address is wrong. We need to correct it. It was issued at the first week of this month. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'm not going to say anything because that's not supposed to be my job to keep an eye on that. And sure enough, he popped up. You know, we got a letter. I'm like, okay. It's kind of like check, right? Make sure all the systems are working. So, no, guys, it feels good. I think we're going to get an approval from Europe in the spring. Actually, it could be faster than that. It could be in 3 months, 4 months. I really don't think it's going to take that long. That's, you know, you want to talk about something to give these guys, assuming this deal works out, which I do believe it will, but I cannot imagine them falling down on this at this stage. Counter offer. I just want to see how far I can push it, you know? I mean, that's the game, right? And they got what they wanted. They want cash bonuses and stuff. So anyway, let's not get to, because that's going to be the meat of our conversation. I feel good about the patents. If anybody has anything else they want to say about this, go ahead. If not, let's cover the other stuff and get to the meat of this, which should be the talking about Tom's group and then the what's going to become the business plan instead of the executive summary. Anything else, guys?
No.
No, let's move on.
Okay. Anything on the educational side, Alper? Updates there? What to expect?
No, I mean, it's definitely my priority, and I'll just, you know, keep sending you stuff, you know, as frequent as I can. So,
okay.
So I guess that's it. I haven't forgotten about it, obviously. So you'll see stuff from me.
Well, if we can put out, if we can just put out a couple chapters a month, I'll be happy, quite frankly. If you can somehow figure out how to do that, you know, it's not the quantity that counts, Alper. You know, this is a long range. In fact, this is an endless project. This is a project that never ends. It's just motion. As long as we keep the motion, we'll be fine. So it's not, there's no production quota other than I would like to see at least one chapter, if not two chapters a month at this stage. However that works out in terms of what days, it doesn't matter. But I think as long as that continues to happen, there's motion there and everybody will be happy.
Yeah, no, that's definitely feasible, Chris.
Okay. on the simulator, Sonny was going to be here, but he had a family situation, basically playing Mr. Mom suddenly without unexpected Mr. Mom designation. So, but I do know where he stands on this. The first, I've got like 47 bids on the programming side of things. They range anywhere. The ones to be taken seriously range from $5,000 to $10,000. I think we can get the job done and done correctly for $7,500 in that range. The bids close in about 2 weeks. That's when the ending date is, and that's when the rest of the screenshots and the architecture of the system should be finished on Sunny's side, very close to that. So basically, when the bids close, I'll have the rest of the specification finished so I can give it to the winner, and then, of course, we have to figure out how to pay for it. But I'm going to worry about that when we get to the point of actually figuring out who it is that's going to do the job. He's working on right now the screens behind the widget screens. Because the widget just spawns the individual, you know, when you click on a particular thing, it opens up another screen where you actually do the individual actions. So that's where it's at. It's moving along. Okay, so that brings us to the main topics here. Let me make sure I'm forgetting something. Patents? No. Portfolio manager, education. Okay, so the support letters will wrap that conversation into the discussion of the business plan. So first, I want to get, because everybody on this call has seen the interactions between Tom and I, and their offer, counteroffer, and comments. I, rather than giving my opinion on it and getting into it, I want to go around the room and have each one of you guys just give me your what I like, what I don't like, what I think, what I'm surprised by, feelings, anything you want to say about where it stands. So I'm going to start with Paul.
I like the dialogue. I think that they're serious. I think that, you know, reading through the proposal, the first one that we've gone back and countered a couple times, I think, as you said, Chris, I think it is probably one of the most fair deals that have been put on the table since, you know, we started looking at potential partners and deals over the last 2 years. You know, they're basically saying, you know, we don't want everything, but we want a little, and we'll work our butt off to get a lot more. And I think that's been the opposite of some of the other deals that we've seen in the past, where people want 40, 50% of the company, you know, right up front. These guys, you know, I think we've progressed in such a manner over the last 2 years with patents and our strategy and our knowingness of kind of what happened to Cantor Fitzgerald and how they got derailed, and I think they have an appreciation for the fact that we know what needs to be done to get to the finish line, and I think they're respecting that, and I think that comes through in their offer. And I really, really like the fact that, you know, they suggested kind of performance bonus milestones after they help us achieve the critical things that we need to get letters and partnerships set up. And I just think it seems like a good working relationship in the making, I guess, is where I stand.
Okay. Were you surprised by anything?
I'm surprised they didn't want more of the company.
Yeah, I agree with that. My first reaction to the I'll summarize when everybody's done. Okay, so you were surprised by the small equity stake.
Yeah, and I mean, and I guess the other point I'm just going to make is I know you sent back the last counteroffer. You haven't heard anything back on that yet, have you?
No.
Okay. So my comment on that is I know you went back and you reduced the retainer by $2,500 and you increased the share buyback to $2. So you gave them a little something, but you took away something as well. Now, are we going to? I guess we'll hold for your answer on this until everyone else talks. But my gut is I don't think we should haggle over the just $2,500. If they need that extra $2,500, and that's the reason why we're not going to get a deal signed with these guys, I don't think we should haggle on that. So that's my opinion on that stance. But let's see what they come back to, and I'm interested to hear what Neil and Alper have to say on the whole thing as well before you comment.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I'll give you my thoughts on that when everybody goes gives their thoughts. Alper, why don't you go ahead and tell us what you think of this?
Sure. For some reason, I wasn't that surprised about the ownership thing they're requesting. In other words, I don't know. The fact they haven't asked for more than 5%, that wasn't really surprising to me. And maybe I missed something, but to me, I mean, this is not a, you know, venture capital fund or hedge fund or anything like that. So they see the upside, obviously. You know, they themselves told us that. But, you know, at the end of the day, well, I don't think what they're looking for is, you know, a big share of a potential blockbuster. I think what they're looking for is a combination of, you know, guaranteed cash and, you know, a little share of a potential blockbuster. I think that's pretty clear. At least looking at the offers we are seeing. So that wasn't really much of a surprise to me. With the investment rounds, that's going to be a different story. I mean, don't be surprised that, you know, if during the investment round we see, you know, deals where at least, you know, in the first offer people ask for much more control and seats on the board and things like that. But these guys, they are not, at the end of the day, they don't really see themselves as investors. They see themselves as brokers, and I think for that they are getting a little bit of both. So I think that's fine. It works for us, of course. I think that's not a bad thing. So that's that. I have a little concern over the cash milestones, and I know we are on the same page with these guys with respect to that, because they said in their email they don't really expect to get paid until they actually raise equity. So in other words, they actually acknowledged, okay, you know, if we get you a couple letters, let's say in the next three to six months, and if the investment is still not there, you know, they know or they anticipate that, you know, the payment is not going to happen. So hearing that from them, I think is good. They understand we want to, you know, run this business lean, and, you know, it's not easy for us to come up with like $80,000 cash if there is no investment round. So that's all good, but still, you know, that's a real possibility. And I don't think anything bad is going to happen because we are on the same page and they said it. But still, you know, if we get a couple letters without an investment round, and that's a very real possibility. Maybe not from the league, you know, for some of the entities we put out there, you know, getting a letter may actually be easier for these guys as opposed to an investment, you know, successfully closing. Because for an investment, we need, you know, we need to sign off on that deal. The investor should be happy with the potential return they're going to get. There's a lot of due diligence going on. There's going to be a lot of attorney talks. These things take time. Whereas with the letters, it's really us, these guys, and the you know, the people we're going to get the letters from. So, you know, it's a matter of scheduling the meeting, going out there, convincing, you know, telling them what we are doing and, you know, what our story is and, you know, get the letter. I mean, that can happen much faster than an investment round. So again, I think we're good because they acknowledge that. I don't know if it is beneficial to kind of carry over at least some of that language to the contract or not. At the end of the day, it is the mutual understanding thing, and I think we are on the same page. But the debt's out there. When I saw that, I was like, okay, you know, what's going to happen if actually we start getting these support letters and not, you know, if we are not able to give the bonuses to these guys. So I guess that's my primary concern, and even that is not a big concern, but, you know, since you asked. What else? I think the buyback clause is fair. The retainer, you know, it's $5,000 or even $7,500 is pretty fair. The 7.5%, I think, is fair. They didn't want to tie it to the valuation. I'm not exactly sure why, but maybe they kind of, I don't know, maybe they would like to be neutral about that, and that's fine. And my primary concern there was, I think I told you this, I didn't want to be forced into a bad deal if the valuation is low. But again, they read that, you know, they read between the lines, and they said, look, you know, we understand this is your deal and you have to sign off on it. We are not going to bind you to any deal. So you know, another instance where they actually understand where we are coming from and responding to that. And I think that's very important. You know, that's what you're really looking for in this type of relationship. So that's fine. You know, 8%, 7.5%, you know, either way, doesn't really matter. Overall, I think we are really close. So I think this will actually materialize next week because, you know, the things that are left is really, you know, a couple percentage points here and there or a couple $1,000s. So I think this is going to close and I'm really happy about this relationship. I like them a lot. They are very smart, very professional. They understand where we are coming from. They made their point of view clear. I think this is going to be really, really good relationship for us.
Okay. Anything else?
No, I'm done.
Okay. We're going to do this a few times because I think when I throw my comments out, you guys will have something else to say. So let's go to Neil, and then I'll tell you what my read on all this is.
Well, I said I haven't got too much more to say than what Paul and Alper had to say. I had some reservations in the beginning. You know, the $7,500, as far as I'm concerned, is not a deal breaker if they need to stick to that. But I think there was, you know, some correspondence about possibly they were not going to need the whole $7,500 or something like that. But you know, that retainer is just, you know, it's just something that they have. They feel that they must have, and I said, okay, you know, that's doable. And the group as a whole, my overall impression with them, that's very favorable. It's a good deal for us. I didn't feel at first it was a great deal, but now I think it's more than adequate. And, you know, we can
sooner we can get going on this, the better. I was really, really surprised at the 5%. I thought that they would want at least 10, especially with the money and dollar that we're dealing with now. But you know, again, they're not a greedy bunch, and I think they're looking more for the long run than they are the short, which makes it very good for us. It makes everything doable on the conservative expenses that we have to contribute toward this, as far as dollars that we can come up with. And I think they realize that. So, I'm more than happy with, what they've counteroffered with, and now we'll just see how they react to this other counter that we've put in this week. And that's about all I have to say about it. I'm very happy with it myself.
Okay, guys, here's my read on this. The real test was when we started, when they sent their initial proposal. Now remember that by either accident or by design, Bernie had a competitor come in on the line. That was a real nice psychological war game that went on there, whether it was intentional or just coincidence. That changed the dynamics of the conversation. I mean, instantly, right from the very first. If it wasn't plotted, it should have been, because it sent the right message. In other words, somebody else is interested. We're going to do this. You guys need to take what we're saying seriously here. Now, when we set our counter against their initial proposal, the deal structure was completely different. And for me, that was the number one test of whether or not these guys were really vested in the long-term success of this business, or whether they were just looking to earn some fees and get some salary money, or and go out on a fundraise-a-thon to see how much cash they could accumulate and base their pay off of that. That was the critical moment for me. If they accepted our deal structure, I fully expected them to challenge various pieces of it, and these bonus payments and all that are not a surprise. At all. It was a very welcome thing to see that they accepted the structure. So that's where I'll start. That told me, okay, these guys are in this to make it work. They are not trying to scalp us for fees. When they made the statements about, I mean, it's very clear in there, they realize they're raising their own money. They're raising the money to pay themselves when they go out to the market. They get that. it's several times in the email that was sent, and they, they're letting us know they understand that we don't have $50,000 to give them if they deliver us a handful of letters. Very, very important. Now, the positives, that's the first thing. They took the structure, they accepted the structure, they put some cash on top of the equity. They did not challenge the equity. We took, Alper said I would be willing to give them twice as much stock. I was like, these guys are assigning weight to the stock. I can feel that. They see the long-term value in this. I'm just going to take that 5% and break it into pieces and make those as the performance markers. Not going to put any cash, although I expected their response with the cash is no surprise. But I'm going to see if they'll take that 5% broken up into pieces and put across these various markers. And when going through the list, I'm like, what's the most important thing? And the leagues obviously are important, but, the player unions are just as important. I think we kind of didn't really get very far into that conversation. We've kind of skipped over, for some reason, the player unions. And I'm like, I don't know. I think you got about an equal power base there. So let's put the weight there. Let's, structure it so that if they get all four of these in each one, I mean, frankly, guys, that if we get four leagues, that's $40,000 plus 1%? Yeah, 1% of the stock. Are you kidding me? I mean, it's over. I mean, we pay $40,000. I mean, that was 1 month's worth of legal bills from Alston and Burt. You know, for 1 month's worth of legal bills and 1%, we win the game. It's over. So I structured all this. I'm like, this is going to be interesting. Okay, I think my view of this is that they are putting value on the company long term. If they take the structure I've given and they accept it without any big changes, and I don't consider these bonus payments big changes, and I'll explain why in a second. Then they're putting their money where their mouth is. As far as the 7,500 versus 5,000, I'm just putting it right back to where it was when we started. If you look at the very first proposition, it was $5,000 now and $2,500 in 60 days. Well, I just took the 25. I just flipped it around and said, I'll give you $2,500, period, and nothing else. And they said, no, we want $7,500. I mean, this is just a game, guys. We're not going to lose this over $2,500. But I just put the number back where it was from their original and took the $2,500, figuring you should raise the money. You know, you want the other $2,500? Go out there and hustle and put a deal together. And you'll get it from the 7.5%. So the message here to me, the only things, I liked all the rest of it, and the reason I don't care about the, if they accomplish every single performance target here, we will have paid them $170,000 and 5% of the stock. If they accomplish all of the things on this list, our chance of approval is about 99.8%. You know, even if they accomplish half of the things, if they get three sports leagues, I mean, to me, this is a no-brainer. As far as the fees go, they're not going to get paid if they don't go raise the money to pay themselves, and they know it. So let's assume that they deliver to us a letter from NBC, from DirecTV, and CBS. Okay? Now, we owe them $10,000 and 10,000 shares. 10,000 shares, well, let's figure out. We have some in the Treasury. I have enough in the Treasury to get the signature. The 10,000 from the six, from the signing, I can take from the Treasury. But when we start getting into this and have to give them shares, and of course, when we start talking about people bringing money in from the outside, we're going to have to figure out how to do that. But I can execute this without asking anybody for stock, the first 10,000. So let's say next week they acquiesce. You know, they're going to play like they got to think about it, even if they're jumping up and down over there going, we win, okay? Because you don't come back and say, you know, great. You know, I think I'll hear from them Monday. You know, they seem to like wait. They waited about 4 or 5 days. They may wait another couple days. It won't be long before they'll either explain how they must have $7,500. I don't think they're going to fight about. Well, let me get to that in a bit. There's a couple other things that are a little bit concerning. But as far as the fees go, it creates a debt. Okay, so They get letters from Fox, NBC, and DirecTV, and it's 10,000 and 10,000 shares. Okay, so now we owe them 10,000 shares. We look at the inventory of shares. We issue them the shares. We owe them $10,000. Now, if we don't have $10,000, it's a debt. They know that. I mean, in the prior deal, the way they were structuring their payments, it's like we'll get paid this much and we'll get paid this much, but only if it's there and only if there's enough money to pay it, not if it's over 25%. So they're already hedging that ability to pay. But we owe it. But what happens when you have those letters? They become part of the portfolio, so when you're going out to raise money, that becomes a supporting document as to why people will give you money. Do you see what I'm saying there? I mean, it's a self-feeding dog. The going out and getting the support letters, I agree. That's going to happen probably faster, a lot faster, because that's making some phone calls, producing some documentation, explaining what we're doing, possibly a plane trip or two, maybe not. You know, in this day of telephones and you know, internet and being able to share documents, it may not be necessary for some of them. Okay, that creates a liability. They achieve that outcome. Well, they know. They know if I'm hassling them over $2,500, and I already told them that we raise the money as we need it, and the way that I survive, because I'm the guy that works on this all the time with no other job, is I sell my own shares. They know that they're not going to get the 10 grand until we close an investment round. So I see it building a liability over, let's say, 12 months. Let's say that they produce all of these outcomes, or 75% of these outcomes in the next year. That becomes an accounts payable entry. They know that. Becomes accounts payable entry. But how valuable is our portfolio when we have all those documents in there that we put along with our business plan and give to a prospective investor? And what happens when included in that portfolio is a European Patent Office approval and all that? See, I just kind of see this snowballing of backup documents and things that put meat into what we're doing being created without creating any immediate liabilities. They're not saying $20,000 due on delivery. They're not saying if we deliver all 40 major leagues, it's $40,000 net 10 days. They know that's not going to happen. We owe it to them. But as you move through that process of getting those letters, you're making your ability to raise money easier and easier and easier. And you're adding that value all along the way. And ultimately, when they raise the money, when we get together and put a deal together and they're in the middle of it, they're going to get paid. They know that. So what I think will really happen, guys, is I really believe that we're going to get this done for less than $250,000 all in. I mean, just put that down right now. I'm putting that on the record right now. I think when it's all said and done, the amount of capital that we're going to raise to get through this process that we laid out in the strategy document is $250,000. And that includes paying off these guys. Because here's what will happen. Hey, if we give them the $7,500, worst case scenario is they stand hard on the $7,500, we'll find the $7,500. They're going to get underway. We're going to start accumulating support letters because that's the big project. We're going to refine the business plan and get all those pieces put together. We're going to see some maturity of the processes and the patents. Like I said, probably within 3 or 4 months, I think we're going to get an allowance out of the European Patent Office. That's going to be huge. Huge when we go out to raise money. Holy cow. I mean, the business, like I said, in one move, it becomes real. Bang. Okay? It's no longer ifs, ands, buts, or maybes. We have it. We have that. Okay? As we move through the process across next year, we're creating a debt. Okay? Now, maybe we don't raise a dime for 6 months. That's not out of the question, guys. I mean, it could take 6 months to close that first round, or it could take 6 weeks. You know, it's really hard to say. When somebody starts talking to me about the condition of the business and I tell them, you know, where we are in terms of the patents and everything, there's a certain sense of urgency because what happens when that European patent matures? Are they going to buy – is our valuation $10 million? Alper, is our valuation $10 million with a European patent? I don't think so. Okay? So where's the time pressure to get the money raised now at a lower valuation? Hey, you know, we could be three. Any day I could get that letter in the mail or the agent in Europe to get that letter in the mail with a patent allowance. That's how it happens, guys. You just get a letter in the mail. Here it is. Allowance. Pay the registration fee. You're done. So that's a natural pressure. All these pending patents are a natural pressure. The European patent is an accelerated pressure item. So I'm going to use that, and they're going to use that to get money in now. Now, what if it doesn't come? Okay, well, it doesn't come. We're still got to get the support letters, guys, whether we do it with or without these guys. If we create a debt to them, which is the worst-case scenario, and they've already put that in. I mean, that's in their head already because there's no terms of payment. It's not, like I said, it's not $20,000 net 10. So I see probably what will happen is they're going to accept or not accept the $5,000. Okay, 75. Guys, whatever, you're stuck on 70, fine. Okay, we're not going to lose the deal over that. That's insanity. Second, okay, so they get to work. We start talking about strategy. We start they get their list together, who they're going to contact, what they need from us, what's going to happen next. Okay, blah, blah, blah. We start going through that. We start working on the business plan. You know, they talk about a bankable story. They know what that means. That means they know what people want to see. We don't really know. So we put our documents together to conform to that. We work with them on that. TikTok, right? TikTok, the time is going by. TikTok, TikTok on these patents. TikTok, TikTok, okay? That's fine. You know, it's cake in the oven. I think that don't be surprised if we don't raise any money at all or very little, enough to cover travel expenses and sundry expenses like we have been until we get in a maturity of the patent, one of the patents. When that happens, the valuation explodes, okay? Then we will be able to raise what we need to raise to get these guys paid down, pay some of our other suppliers off. But we want to keep the capital raise small, guys. We want to keep it small because we're going to be giving away gold bricks for slug nickels, and that's the bottom line. I mean, patent maturities will give us a real value to our company. And regulatory approval, of course, the sky's the limit. I mean, that's the gold. That's the gold ring, and that's the one that everything hangs on. So I don't see the horse trading that'll go on here about, yeah, you know, marking in a spreadsheet. Okay, you know, you got us two player unions. We owe you 20 grand, and we owe you 50,000 shares, guys. We need to find 50,000. We don't have the 20 grand. They know that because we haven't raised the money yet. We do need to issue the shares, guys. Where are the shares coming from? Here's the share registry. We're all going to have to give up some shares or something. We're going to have to pay these guys just, you know, half of what we owe them, the equity portion. Put it in their hands. Keep moving. That's how this is going to play out. Provided this deal moves ahead, which I cannot imagine unless I – and I'll tell you the thing that's a little spooky to me that could be a deal killer, okay? It's not the 7.5% or the 8%. It's not the $5,000 or the $7,500. I like the fact that they're fighting me over the valuation because that shows they're putting value on it, on the stock. If you look at the way they termed it $1.50 or market value. No. Because I don't know that there's going to be a market, and who the heck is going to decide what that number is? They were saying we want a minimum of $1.50 or market price. Well, you can't have that, and you know you're going to have to fix the price. Now, what I'm really doing here, though, is I'm locking them into a share value. If you haven't figured this out, if they come back and say, you know, they've seen me twice strip market off the terms, so they understand I'm not going to take a. I'm not going to take a price minimum or market as a term. You're going to have to fix the price. And the psychology here, this was brought to me by Stephen Parker, is brilliant. It's brilliant because what is it doing? It's increasing the value of the stock in their mind. They have to think, well, geez, if we, you know, what number do we use? Because they're already saying the company's worth at least $15 million because they're saying we won't let you buy the stock back in 1 year for less than $15 million valuation or market. That's the first statement they made with that response. $1.50 or market says in 1 year or less, we say this is $15 million or more. Actually, $1.50 times 12.5 million shares. So do that math. It's actually higher than that. So they're saying we know what we can do in 1 year, and we believe that if you're going to buy it back from us, you're going to buy it back from us for at least whatever. What is one? Let me do the math here. $1.50 times 12.5 million. $18.75 million actually. at least $18.75 million is what you're going to have to value the company at if we're going to sign this agreement and agree to this clause. Or $18.75 million or more, okay? Now, I'm saying, no, you can't have market because, you know, the market could be $500 million. You don't really know. I mean, what happens when we get patent allowances and a CFTC approval? What do we have? You know, do we have $50 million worth of value? Do we have $100 million worth of value? So I'm playing a bit of a game here with them. The truth is that I don't want the stock back. I mean, I don't know. Maybe we do. If it's worth $50 a share and we have a $2 buyback clause, be an idiot not to do it. But it's more of a psychology of I want to know where you're putting the value of the stock. So them battling me over that tells me they get it, okay? They get it. This is real to them. This is not about getting cash money in their pocket next Thursday. This deal is not going to pay them a damn thing other than the first money they get out of our pocket if they don't make it work, and they know that. If we give them $7,500 or $5,000 and they don't perform, that is the last money they're ever going to see. Okay? That's all they're going to get. And
hey, Chris?
Yeah?
Just a quick question. I'm thinking about this as this conversation records. I think that, I mean, we're talking about a deal here. We're talking about our strategy with them. Last thing I'd want is for you to post this publicly and then listen to this conversation.
Well, no, Paul. I appreciate that, but listen, I can't break the protocol. Okay, they're not going to walk away from this. It's not going to happen. If they do, because they hear me talking about deal structures, they're the wrong guys.
Okay. I'm just thinking about that, right? We're having a good discussion
I absolutely. Listen. I don't suffer from that kind of paranoia, guys. I'm a play poker with your cards on the table guy. I've always been that way. I think we have such extraordinary value here that if these guys don't see it, somebody will. I don't believe this deal is going to, you know, because how many deals have we tried to put together that fell apart? I mean, come on. We've been through how many phone calls? I mean, you know, 100? 150? I mean, I don't look at it from that perspective. I know that we are building extraordinary value. Through the nature of us publishing this information that we've been publishing, I mean, I've published everything. I published the summer teleconference call documents. That's published. It's in the public domain. I mean, we don't have anything to hide. We really don't have anything to hide. What I'm saying is how I feel. Now, if you're saying you're getting nervous about the psychology, I'm discussing this. This is the truth. These guys, do you think that our stock is going to be worth, what is our stock going to be worth in 1 year if these guys make all their markers? Is it going to be worth $2?
A lot more than 84 cents a share.
Okay, well, they get that. They get that. And they got that from the first phone call. I mean, guys, just hold that for a second, Paul, because I'm almost done. I'm going to give you the one thing I'm worried about, and then we'll go round-robin around the room and get everybody's input on this. So everything to me matches up now. They are really interested in the long-term success of the business, and the deal structure reflects that. Okay? That's a very good sign. Our maximum capital risk is going to be $5,000 or $7,500, and that's it. That's the capital risk. And we're going to get that money. Okay? Whatever that figure is, we're not going to not make this deal happen over that. Period. I guarantee you that. Nick is not going to let that happen. I'm not going to let that happen. I'm going to put out an all call, you know, ding, 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 like I did with the lawyer fees in the summer. And if we got to round up $7,500, we will, and we'll do it in no time. Okay? So fear not. That's not important. Here is the thing that spooks me. Okay? In the terms, there is one line they added to the support letters which said direct or indirect support. I don't know if you caught that, but that is problem. Okay? I don't know what that means. And I asked what it means. And Paul's answer is, Tom's answer was, I said, what is meant? Did you guys, well, I just assume you did. I made four changes to their deal. Changed the 7,500 to 500. I changed 8% to 7.5, and I changed the buyback. I don't care about the 5,000. I don't care about the 7.5. If they want to stand on $7,500, if they want to stand at 8%, it's not a deal breaker. Buyback at a flat $2 a share instead of $1.50 a market. I'm testing where they're putting the value of the stock. And, you know, if they keep putting on or market or market or market, I'm going to say, guys, you got to quote a price. And that price they quote is going to be very telling. Very telling. I mean, it might be $15 a share. Okay? I hope it's a big number. I hope that, you know, they say, well, gosh, if you're going to make us quote a price, $50. Okay? You know what I'm going to do when they do that? I'm going to haggle just a little tiny bit and leave it. Because now they've put down in stone, here's what we think this company is going to be worth with our involvement. Fantastic. Okay? Here's the problem. Indirect or direct support. If you look at their offer sheet, they put in front of documented industry support, they put the words indirect or direct. Now, I said, what does that mean? I said, what is meant? And you guys didn't see this response. I said, what is meant by indirect documented injuries? What is meant by indirect documented industry support? The answer is, the intent is to clarify that we are working as a team. That did not satisfy me. Okay? That answer does not reconcile with me. I can't make sense of that. And I spent a lot of time thinking about it. Okay. Indirect, I know what direct documented industry support means because we listed letter of support or no action by CEO, CFO, or equivalent. But then when I put the whole, you know, this is like back to kindergarten when you're doing language, I took the parentheses off and I took the or out and said indirect documented industry letter of support or no action by CEO, CFO, or equivalent. What the hell does that mean? Okay, indirect documented industry letter of support or no action by CEO. I can't. Okay, the answer is the intent is to clarify that we were working as a team. You know, I came up blank there. So to me, it feels like a way around getting a CEO, CFO letter. Now, if that's the case, that's a deal killer. Okay? That's a deal killer. Because you guys know, if we don't have the top brass on board, you can't have some middle manager. I don't know what indirect means. I can't make sense of it. And I can't make sense of their answer. If we don't have what we listed here as our requirements, we can't get this done. We can't go to the back to the CFTC. Okay? Can't have some middle manager or some substitute dude or somebody that's five or six levels down the chain. It's got to be a CEO, CFO level approval or backing. So that is the fly in the ointment. Unless I'm overreacting to this, that's the thing that bothers me right there. So if they get hung up on that term, I'll probably call a conference call. And we'll need to talk out what's up here, because that bothers me. So that's what I got, Paul. You seem to be loaded up with some things. So why don't you start with this round of comments?
No, I'm in agreement with you, and I'm sure I think Alper and Nick are, and Neil are as well. I think that you went back and you asked to clarify things and. And, you know, it's balls in their court. I think that these guys are, you know, they say that they can. Tom was very, you know, adamant in that first call that I missed when I listened to the recording that I'll get you to where you need to go. We will get you into these high level people and organizations and industries and unions. And unions I'm not so concerned at. I mean, they'll get you into the NHL Players Union, no problem, because they are on. I sent you that email a few weeks ago. Like, they're part of the union. Like, they used to be players. Bernie can help with that. They'll get us there. So at the end of the day, I think you're right. I think you got to clarify the industry support, who these signatures are, you know, what is the goal of these signatures. I mean, you've already been before top brass in NHL and Major League Baseball, so why can't they do the same for NFL and NBA? You know, same thing. So, yeah, I'm fine with all your previous comments, and I'm interested to see what happens this week.
Okay. Albert?
Chris, I think you have a really good read on this, and you clearly gave this a lot of thought, and I agree with everything you said. I guess I kind of realize I'm probably focusing on the not most important things as you were talking, but I agree with everything you say. The direct versus indirect thing is actually extremely important. The whole point of doing this is those letters. And I agree. I mean, if they're not going to come from the very top, you know, they may as well not come, because, you know, that's not going to get it done. Because, you know, you can have a middle-level manager approval or backing, and then, of course, you know, we know exactly what's going to happen. The CEO is going to say, what does that mean? You know, I will not authorize this, and it's over. So so it's extremely important, and I agree with you also on their response. I don't know what it means. I have no idea what that means. So we should definitely clarify that. And the other things, right, they are not deal breakers, and if they really want 7.5% and 7,500 and 8%, I think that's fine. Both of those are fine. And in general, I really appreciate you kind of being specific about those things. You know, one example being the indirect versus direct. The other is 150 or market. I don't like vagueness at all. So it's, and I agree. I mean, instead of 150 or market, I'd rather have two. If you don't like two, okay, then let's talk about three or five or 10. But yeah, market. I mean, what is market? I mean, that you can never answer that question. So that's good. And then on the industrial support letters, yeah, I mean, I don't know what an indirect letter could mean. I mean, a letter either comes from the top or we don't have a letter. I mean, that's, you're exactly right, and we should, and if we're going to, you know, haggle over one thing, that's it. So you're definitely on the right track here, and I still think we're going to get clarification on that, and the deal is going to materialize, but we should be on the same page, and we should understand what it means.
Okay. Anything else, Hopper?
A call. Yeah, there should be a call, because it's pretty important, that one.
Yeah. Neil?
Well, I'm hoping what the direct and non-direct means is that that the CEO or, you know, president, whoever, is either going to give a letter of direct support or an indirect support, a letter of non-objection. Let's see, but again, I have no idea what that means either. But that's you know, in the process, I would hope that's what that means. They can't directly support it yet because they don't know the end result, or what they're directly supporting, but they can give a letter of non-objection, that they're not going to object to this process happening.
That's the key.
Yeah, but what does it mean? It needs to be defined and clearly stated.
Okay, anything
else?
Nope,
that's it.
Well, guys, and Albert, thanks for the comments about thinking about this clearly. Let me tell you why. I read this thing giddy like a school kid, because this is, you know, being diligent about this is like saying, to me, this is it. This is the rocket fuel to put in the rocket. And, you know, if these guys can get no action, you know, a letter of support, that's great. But what we really need is, and what we told Major League Baseball and everybody when we got underway, before we even got into the development stages, we just need them not to tamper with it, you know, to not come out down against it. If these guys can accumulate that stack of letters from the CEO or the CFO or in that level of the organization of the list that we provided on that piece of paper for $170,000, that is the price to put this project online next year. That's the price. And it's pennies in terms of cash. And the 5% that they get, the amount of percentage that we give up over and above that 5% should only be the amount of money necessary to pay them their fees, and that's it. In fact, if it were left up to me, and if I could work it out, I would pay them half of those fees before we got approval and half of those fees after we got approval, because our valuation goes from $10 million or $20 million to, I don't know, $100 million, $250 million overnight. So, to me, it's almost too good to be true. Because if they will do this job, and I hope that I'm confused about indirect versus indirect, and that's all there is to it. It means direct support. But see, that was already said. No action or support is in parentheses. So if you're repeating that, by saying indirect or direct, you're being redundant. That's why I stripped it out. If you're trying to say indirect support means a letter from the secretary on the letterhead of John Smith, CEO's desk, that's not going to work. You just assume not bother. So either you can reach into these organizations and access the top, and we get letters from those people because that's what we need, or you can't. If you can't, the deal is worthless. If you can, the deal is fantastic. You know, it's going to work out for everybody really well. And it will get this machine up and running by the end of next year, if not by the end of the summer. I mean, depends on how fast we can get this stuff together. Because, you know, if we have this in 6 months, if we have a critical mass, and we'll know what that critical mass is, you know, it really hinges on the leagues more than anything else. If we got 3 league letters in January, I mean, how long do you think it's going to take to get all the rest of those people? You know, another 60 days? I mean, whatever. The point is that it's packaged up in such a way that we really can't lose. As long as if they clarify this indirect, and that's the key sticking point. That there is no other sticking point. If they clarify that to be what we've represented we need, and we've said over and again, and they said they could do it, if we clarify that and that issue goes away, for all intents and purposes, we won the game. It's all a matter of just going out, you know, it's all a matter of going out and going through the motions. But if you put me in front of the guys that make these decisions, I'm going to get what we need. I can get a no-action letter. A letter of support is going to be kind of hard from the leagues and stuff. We know right now we're not going to get that. Not until that thing's been running for a while. But a letter of no action, yeah. How many? I'd love to say all four, but I think we can pull off three. We already got two, basically, all the way, almost all the way there. I think we can pull a third one. Maybe basketball. Might not be NFL. NFL might be the holdout, you know. But I think we can get the level we need to get the CME to self-certify. Not formal approval. Self-certify. They are so powerful. They are so extraordinarily powerful. I don't think, remember, Washington was always telling us, be careful. They're the one guy, they're the guys they have trouble with. I think the CME would be willing to take a chance on a self-certification because they're powerful enough to take on any comers. So what are we really looking at? We know the thing will self-certify, guys. We already went down that trail. We're not really looking at a formal approval. The laws have not changed. The laws have not changed. The CFMA of 2000 still rules the market. So what do we need? We need a self-certification because that's still available. We know it self-certifies. Why do we know that? Because we had an agreement to do that with USFE before the world fell apart. So what are we really looking at? We need to make the CME comfortable. How do we make the CME comfortable? We need the letters. Okay? These guys get the letters for us or get us in the right rooms to talk to the right people. We're going to get the letters. We're going to owe $170,000 if they have an absolute success. But here's the truth. If they get three leagues, what do we owe them? $30,000? $30,000 in the stock? Are you kidding me? I mean, yeah. Let's just hope that we've not been duped on their abilities to get to these people at the top. That's where I'm stuck. They keep saying over and again, we can, we can, we can. Yes, I'm telling you, okie dokie. Well, I'm not going to let you weasel the language here, guys, because I'm not trying to be a lawyer, but I'm just telling you, if you don't get us the letters from the top, like Alfred said, you're wasting your time. We're wasting our time because what will happen? It will get disavowed when it goes up the chain of command. What? I didn't authorize this. My secretary wrote this. No. Sorry, guys. That's not going to work. So let's hope that's the case. Okay. Let's cover, and this is should probably be a discussion between Alper and Paul a little bit on the business plan, and I think that'll round us up for today. So, guys?
Yeah, so let me... So thanks. First of all, thank you both, Chris and Paul, for the revisions. I haven't looked at it in detail yet, but you know what my concern was. The document was getting really, really fat, and you know I don't really think that's what an executive summary is meant to be. You know, it's really not a summary when it's 27 pages. So you know, we know that these things are not the business. When I think about a business plan, at the end of the day, we know that the business plans are almost never read from start to cover. Okay, so the executive summary in some cases that one is being read, and then you know a couple of other sections may be looked at, but from start to cover that almost never happens. You know, wherever the potential investors are, they are busy, which is understandable. They see, you know, probably close to 1,000 plans every year. And, you know, as unique as our proposal and story is, it's never going to, you know, get, you know, full attention. So what's the response? The response is, of course, you need to still put, obviously, full business plan together. You know, if nothing, it helps you or the writer or, I mean, us, you know, to kind of clarify our thoughts and think about what we need and where we are and what else we need. And those things kind of exist in bits and pieces now. Like, we have a strategy document. I mean, we have an implementation plan, right? That's a two-pager we shared with Tom and Pete. We have an educational strategy document. We have all these other things. So those bits and pieces exist. we just need to compile them and give it another read and make it, you know, read like a business plan. So my concern really was, okay, so yes, maybe we do need a business plan, a full-blown business plan now, because we expect some investment movement in the next 6 months. Every business plan also has an executive summary. You typically write the executive summary last, after you collected all your thoughts and, you know, put together all the other sections. You don't have to do it that way, but it's actually easier to write it last. But at the end of the day, the business plan typically is, you know, a 25, 30-page document, maybe with another, you know, 25, 30 pages of appendices, okay? An executive summary is a few pages, you know, 4 or 5 pages, tops. So my concern was, you know, we are kind of in between now, you know. What we call an executive summary is not executive summary anymore, but it's not really a business plan either. You know, it's definitely getting there, but it's not there yet. So then the question is, okay, well, what have we got here? And you know, what should we do about it? And the question always is, who's going to look at this document and for what purpose, right? I mean, who is our audience? I mean, really, I mean, business plan, executive summary, those are just names. The question always is, who's going to look at it and for what purpose? So Chris, I know you have a couple of leads, and I don't really have visibility on those, so I don't know what those people are exactly looking for. And I know that an investor, Tom and Pete may bring in, is going to ask for a full business plan, which of course is going to have an executive summary at the, you know, at the very beginning. And then it's up to them, you know, to read only the executive summary or the full business plan or section 5 and 7 and the executive summary. That's up to them. Our job is to give them a full-blown business plan with an executive summary. And, you know, in most cases, the business plan is kind of a signal anyway, right? I mean, you're basically signaling that, you know, you can get this job done. And how can you get the job done if you cannot even put together, you know, a complete business plan? So the executive summary, so the business plan with an executive summary, I think that should happen, and it is now time to spend some of our focus on that, because I don't want to scramble. We scrambled many times before. You can't put these things together in the last 2 days. It's just impossible. Okay? So Paul and I should get going on that, and it's going to be a collaboration, you know. Let's do this, let's do that. You know, Paul is going to write some sections, I'm going to write some sections, and then we'll circulate it for reviews and things like that. So that's going to happen over the next couple of months. It's not, I mean, this is not going to be finished, you know, this week. You know, that's just not realistic. Now my question is, going back, Chris, to your leads, I know you need something in the shorter term. So I'm just trying to understand, you know, what that is and when you need it by, because maybe the answer is we put something together this week that's going to, you know, serve you and your purpose, whatever that is. And then, you know, behind the scenes, we also, you know, we keep working on the more complete, you know, full-blown document. So okay. Maybe that's the way to go, I guess before we make a decision, we just need to understand, you know, what exactly we need and for whom.
It looks like we're kind of in a no man's land here in terms of technical definitions as to what the document is. Just for now, let's complete this update that we were doing. Let's leave it called the executive summary. I would rather somebody look at this and say, my God, you know, it's a 40-page executive summary and think these guys must have a 300-page business plan that goes with this, than to give them a 30-page or 40-page business plan and they say, well, this isn't a business plan. This is like a long executive summary. So the reality is that, come on, guys, look at what happened here with Tom getting all excited. How did it happen? He joined in on a conference call, and I verbally over the telephone got him wound up, and we ended up with what? He wanted a summary, the summary document, the strategy document. We sent that to him, and he sends back a two-page memorandum of understanding. That's going to be pretty close to what happens with people that are going to want to fund it, okay? Get them on the phone, go through the whole story, give them a snapshot. The documents are follow-on things. That's something you read when you're sitting on a Sunday afternoon on the back porch and there's no good football game on. I mean, nobody reads this crap. Guys, you know that. They don't read it. They don't read it. Nobody reads it. Right? People have a 5-minute attention span? 3 minutes? The length of a song on the radio? I mean, the people that are going to read this from cover to cover, it's 1 in 1,000 people that think our project is fantastic. It's more of a thing you put on the shelf, like you got that covered, you know? Okay, we invested in this company, and here is their 300-page business plan on the shelf. They got a business plan. You know when they refer to that business plan? When there's a problem. Okay? So I think the powerful things that we have, first of all, and I'll make no apologies for it, I'm the most powerful thing you've got. Put me on the phone, okay? That's how I'm going to find out whether we got a live prospect or not. There's no way to convey the power of this project and where we are and the history and the emotion and the excitement without a telephone or face-to-face meeting. So that's your first line. Your first line is, set up a time to talk on the phone. Because every significant thing that has ever happened to this business has happened as a result of a telephone call or a personal meeting. Think about it. Okay? There's personal meeting is tops, but, you know, that's not possible to do most of the time. Second is a telephone call. Then you send the follow-on document, which we probably should have, okay, to-dos. Let's update, because we'll end up going around and around and around. Yes, we need a longer business plan. That is going to be asked for, more than likely. That is going to take a bit of time to do. If we get a request for that, we tell them the truth. You know, we've got some elements that we need to, if we're not done with it, if we get rushed into that situation, if we get a lead, because they're going to send out a teaser letter, teaser script or however they handle it, they get a lead back. The next level is going to be, probably, like we have the strategy document. That strategy document could probably be expanded to 4 pages and hit the highlights of the business and the opportunity. That could actually turn into the executive summary, the short executive summary. In other words, let's hit the high points of what we've got, what this business is about, what we're trying to do here, and then the pathway to get from here. That's a natural flow from that. So like a highlight page, you know, here's what it's about, here's the opportunity, and here's the pathway to success. That could be your follow-up to the lead generator these guys send out. But really, you want to get a phone contact as soon as you can. Then if they ask for, well, you know, we're really interested, they look at the 4 pages, and they say, we're really interested, we want something more meaty, then you send them the executive summary. If they get through that 40 pages and they still don't have enough, then you have the longer business plan. But I think, guys, we don't really know what to put into that business plan without some input from guys like Tom, who probably can tell us what to fill in the blanks there, because we kind of have like a 40,000 foot view of what the business will develop into, but how much detail do you really get into? A lot of our business is built into the existing infrastructure, so it's like it's a product licensing model, right? I mean, what do we really end up with as a business? I always saw this as a product licensor, okay? We're a licensor. We hold intellectual property of enormous value that people have to pay to trade, to use, okay? So that's the core value of the business. And there's a marketing machine that goes out there and does advertising and public relations work that focuses mainly on awareness and education. So raise the awareness and drive people to the education, because that's how we build our base. So and then you have index generation. So there's three parts to the business. Now, how much detail do you need? We don't need all the rest of it, banking and exchange, because that's not our business. That's all CME, Bank of America, Chase, and everybody else who is all the financial pipelines of the world. That's none of our business. That's not what we're in. So product licensing, so what, you have a room full of negotiators and lawyers and stuff that write up contracts. You have the index generation. What is that? Another room full of people that collect data and feed it into computers and pipe it out into the news wires and all that. Third part, and this is the fun part, this is where I want to be, the public relations education machine. You know, go out, tell the world what you're doing, explain it, bring in new spokespeople, do interviews and all that. What do we have here? How does it work? Is there anything else to our business model? I mean, I don't know what it is, if there is. And how much of that do you have to detail? Do I have to say I want Michael Jordan? I mean, you asked me who do I want working for us? I want every high-profile Hall of Fame star I can get. If I can only have one, I'll take Michael Jordan, even with his gambling. I think we can spin that. So, see, that's the thing I don't know. And I don't know that people are going to buy into our business based on the details of our plans. Because look at this, is what happened with Tom is excellent. Because I think we have reached a point in the business development where that light bulb is going to start going off. That's what you have to see. I mean, we have enough. We've done enough work now that when we explain it to somebody who's in the business development and financing and puts deals together, the light bulb goes off, right? Well, the light bulb goes off from a conversation, a couple of emails, and a few short documents. Now, do you really believe that we're going to need a 300-page document to raise $250,000? I don't think so. Somebody's either going to get it or they're not. And they're either going to want to be part of it or not. And they're either going to trust that we know how to implement this or not. So I guess my answer is, what do we do right now, okay? Because these topics, it's hard. My mind runs all different directions. And okay, right now, as soon as possible, please update the executive summary with what we've been passing back and forth. And let's just leave it there. Let's leave it with, it's an executive summary, and it's 40 pages long, and that maybe that's 30 pages too long. I don't care, okay? Let's just have a current document that reflects where we are. We have the strategy document, which shows how we get from here to approval. That's powerful. Anybody who's a serious business person, they want to know what the keys are to success. We clearly laid that out in the strategy document, and it caught traction. I mean, we gave it to Tom's group, and they came right back. So we got that down. That thing works, okay? It tells a person exactly what we need to do to get from here to there. The teaser page, assuming we ink this deal with Tom and that we're not fouled up on this indirect, that's not some kind of sneaky thing that happened there. I hope I'm wrong, but, you know, this is like the nuclear missile launch keys. You know, you're sitting there in the chair and you got two people, or I think it's two people, they have to turn one key and then lift a switch and a box, and then both of them have to turn another key at the same time. Well, that's what I'm looking at here. That's how important this is. So, you know, it's that last key that you stick in and turn, and the rocket takes off. So I hope I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, hallelujah, guys. We're on our way, because this is real. I hope that's true. It concerns me that they haven't come right back, but that could be just, you know, we'll think about it for a few days. Maybe they come back and that phrase is gone. If that phrase is not gone, we're going to have to call a phone conference and work it out, try to understand what's going on here. So I think that their teaser page that they're going to send out to get people interested, that's going to be a combination of the strategy document that we already developed that they acted on, the one that says here's how we succeed, probably with like 2 pages ahead of it that gives the bankable story, they like to call it, that, you know, it gets people excited, that highlights everything. And that becomes, maybe that becomes like our mini executive summary, like the real, you know, Reader's Digest version of the business, of the executive summary. We have a lot. Alper, you don't have time to write a business plan. I mean it'll take you 6 months to write a business plan. And Paul, you guys are working full time in an economy that, you know, makes everybody work 3 times as hard for the same $1. So let's be realistic. That's not going to happen in any reasonable amount of time. It's not my forte. I don't write business language. But these guys, not that kind of stuff, not that kind of technical stuff. These guys do. So if they insist on if our executive summary is insufficient, let them tell us this is not enough. You know? Okay, well, you're going to have to get involved in this. Offload that responsibility to them. Remember, if they don't raise the money, they don't get paid.
Chris, that's exactly what I was thinking. Is like, I was like, we're hiring these guys in essence to like advance our business, and that's what they do. They help they pitch companies to investors. Well, okay, then they should be the ones to help write the business plan. 100%. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, that's what it should be, guys. I think we got enough on our plate. Alper, you need to write chapters and spit those things out, as many as you can without crowding the rest of your responsibilities. You know, just keeping up with the carbon copies of the emails that I send out is almost a full-time job. So, I mean, just my output every day, I know you guys have to sort through. Let's not put work out there that is not really ours, and we don't even know if we need it.
Okay, so we're 10 minutes. Sorry, go on, Chris.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary. So, in summary, let's complete the job of updating the long executive summary. Let's just do that and stop.
Okay. So with that being said, okay, so I've done the first draft. Chris, you've made comments. You said we need to, you know, for the milestones and update, you know, the what's the next steps. We have that in the strategy paper. That'll be worked in. Alper, you need to take a look at the first draft of what I've did with updating, you know, all the different things in the emails that I sent. And then we can get that done sometime middle of this week, towards the end of this week.
Okay, perfect. That's fine. That's a good timeline. Alper, your thoughts on this, and then I'll go to Neil, and if you want to throw in any comments on anything else, let's wrap the call up.
No, that's fine. I know, and I agree. So I have a draft here, so I'll give you comments shortly, and Paul and I will work on that. And then overall, I think the primary goal of this week is, you know, to kind of get this deal done and move forward.
Yeah, that's the big thing, and it's all going to hinge on indirect or direct. Hopefully. You know, I'm the positive guy, but I have to tell you, when I looked at that and read it over and over again, and then I asked for clarification, I got an answer I couldn't understand. That worries me. That there's something I hope I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, hallelujah, we're done. I mean, it's all over but the crying, you know? I mean, there's a pathway from here to there, but I can't let that clause stand in there. That's a window to get a letter that says, you know, I'm Susie Jones, I'm Bob Smith's secretary. No, worthless. All right? Not going to work. Okay. That's next week. I think we're going to get some action there. Yeah, we're going to get, something's going to happen next week. So, you're done. Okay, Neil, you have any final thoughts?
No, you guys pretty much, you'll handle that end of it. I'm just going to, continue doing, getting addresses and things like that, whereas we've started with the restaurant end of it now, and we'll see what can happen with those. And whereas, go around into the major cities using the, Yellow Pages, et cetera, and newspapers, trying to find out who the restaurant type people are, or sports restaurant type things, and we'll continue with that.
Okay.
That's all I have.
Okay, guys. Well, I'll you'll know what happens. Like I said, I would be surprised if I don't get something first thing on Monday morning. If not, probably Tuesday. Let's hope that it's just a misunderstanding on my part as to what those words mean. I hope so. Hope that's how it goes. If it does, the rest of those terms are totally. I mean, like I said, we're not going to lose a deal over $2,500 or 0.5%. And even the buyback number, even if they stick a number on the board of $50 a share, I'll stick, I'll let them have that because it shows, it shows that they're placing a lot of value on the company. And that's what I want to see, because if they're not placing a lot of value on the company, then they probably shouldn't be working with us. So.
And just one last thing in closing, Alper, just take a look at all of Chris's comments, right, that he's been making in the email exchange between the three of us before you go and make your comments and suggestions for edits before I go back and start working on draft number two.
Okay, we'll do, Paul.
Okay, guys.
All right. Have a good Sunday. Yeah, take care, guys.
All right. Bye-bye.